Are we ready to have an AA meeting? My name is Alex and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Alex.
Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Books of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they established their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight, and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Please stay in your seats to minimize distractions while our speaker is talking. Tonight's speaker is Chris S., coming to us from the Sharpsburg Serenity Group.
Thank you very much. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me everything I have in my life today. I am a member of the Sharpsburg Serenity Group, and my sobriety date is November 19th, 1998. I came up with Wes and Antonio back there. All day I've been thinking, oh, I'm just going to go and talk, and everybody will, you know, it'll be great. And about 5 miles out, Wes said, oh, yeah, you'll get to meet my dad. And I went, oh, boy. And I wasn't nervous until then, but it's a pleasure to meet Wes's dad. And then Antonio put it all in the text. He said, oh, I didn't know you were speaking tonight. I wouldn't have come. You probably heard it so many times. We had a girl come down. I think her name was Anna from the Fifth Tradition. She was about 9.5 months pregnant, but she came down and gave a talk, and wow, she just told my story. She said she was just a mess. Whenever she took a drink, it was just a disaster. And that's my experience. I don't know. I told Mr. John that and it's kind of embarrassing. My story is embarrassing, you know, getting drunk and falling down the steps. But it's my story, and that's what happened. And when you read that off of page 29 about God will show how we found our relationship with him, that's what happened. God took somebody that was totally broken and changed them. But I was a mess. I had good parents. They were both professional people. I think my little brother and I maybe were a little spoiled. We were talking about the kids in Peachtree City. We were talking about people in Peachtree City, or a lot of the goth kids and the troublemakers. That's kind of what I became. We lived in South Florida. And my parents would entertain a lot and have a lot of people come over for dinners, and they'd all get drunk. And as kids, we just all watched this stuff. And my mom taught at the University of Miami, and I would ride my skateboard around there to all this fraternity and sorority houses and just be like looking in. They were having a great time, and they were all drinking. And my mother said one time, she goes, here's a picture I found of you. And I'm like 7, and I've got a Coors shirt on, or, you know, a Jack Daniels mirror or something on my wall at home. I'm like 7. And so I couldn't wait to drink. I mean, it just the thrill. I hadn't even drank, but I couldn't wait. And I began drinking at an early age. We were talking to Mr. Jarre, too, about being at Ridgeview. I was lived in South Florida, but I had family here in Georgia. And next thing you know, I'm at the adolescent chemical dependency program at Ridgeview in 1979, 80. I was a kid. And it was where I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We were talking about that earlier, about under Dr. Talbot's office on Friday night at 8 p.m. And I went to that meeting and I heard all these old people, you know, about my age now. And they were all talking about drinking and projectile vomiting and, you know, breaking vows and breaking promises and breaking, you know, the things we talk about. And then they, every one of them talked about, but when it became objectionable to me, this is what I did. I asked another man for help, or I began this, or I helped, you know, whatever. And I heard the message of Alcoholics Anonymous that night, that it seemed to be working for them. And I had two thoughts. One was, if I ever run into somebody like Wes that needs AA, I can point them in the right direction. Or if it gets bad enough, you know, before I blow my brains out or run off the edge of the road, I'll try it because it seems to be working. And that's what happened. I had to get to a rock bottom where I just gave up and did anything, even AA. And I've been sober ever since. And so, but I was just a mess. I like it. You remember the cartoon, The Tasmanian Devil? He'd go, and spin around. And that was me. You add a little alcohol, and I was like the Tasmanian Devil, like the Kool-Aid Man come busting through the wall. And just always something going on. And what I did is I started drinking at an early age, and I loved the effect produced by alcohol so much that my older brothers and sister went on to become professional people and went to college. I went to jail. You know, I went to treatment programs. Hey, I'm embarrassed to say that now, but that's what happened. And actually went to college in jail. But what I did is I drank. And I started drinking in the summertime. And it was like the summertime of 1978. I think Van Halen 1 had just come out. It was an incredible summer. But I think the first time I drank, we got in trouble, and my buddy threw up on his mother. But the very next day, we were in trouble, but we still went out and drank again. It might have been the day after, but I think it was the very next day. And so it started a pattern for me that I drank and I drank and I drank and I drank and I drank until I got locked up or locked down. And that's the only time I did not drink. And I was a mess. And the Alcoholics Anonymous right off from the start. But I do everything that a low bottom alcoholic does. I went from Ridgeview to Charter Beachford to, you know, Bradford. I mean, they were going downhill fast. And I remember ending up at GMHI, was a general, the Georgia Medical, and people were banging their heads against the wall and stuff, and I'm like, oh my goodness, we're not in Kansas anymore. This is for real crazy people. But that's where my drinking took me. And I got into some trouble. I was always lazy and wanted the better things in life, and what better way to do that than to be involved in things I shouldn't have been involved in. One of them was I grew up in Miami and moved to Atlanta, and it was 1980-something, and so, you know, all my cousins there, we just were bringing things up here, and I got in trouble for that, and ended up going to the penitentiary, but that's it saved my life, is what it did. And I'm so thankful for it now. And it's funny, amends, when I make amends, I moved to Florida. That's where I got sober. And then I moved back up here to help with my mother in the last part of her life. And kind of, I've been here ever since. But I don't know. This whole thing is it's just God is good. And continues to do for me what I cannot do for myself. And it's like, you know, you come around and they go, okay, well, what do you want out of this? And you say, okay, I want this. And then whatever you might think, you know, write down on a piece of paper, what God has in store for you is just 100-fold, you know. And that's my experience. And I got to tell you what I did when I got sober. I drank. I got out of big trouble in Florida. And where do you, or in Georgia, where do you go when you're 30-something? and just getting out, treatment program, jail, whatever, home to mama. And they took me in and helped me out, and I was blind drunk 3 weeks later, driving across the Midway Bridge. The deputy said you were scraping one wall and going over and scraping the other. I don't even remember. I just woke up in jail. And that's how I drank. I mean, I start drinking and wake up and come to in jail. But there was an AA club, the Alano Club in Fort Walton Beach. And between the Alano Club and the Bridgeway Detox on Shell Avenue, you could just go and ring the doorbell. And they go, Miss Jeannie would go, "Oh, it's you again, love. Come on in." And, you know, and, "Okay, Miss Jeannie." And they had the message of Alcoholics Anonymous there. They did what we do. And they had people come in. It'd be cracking, you know, lightning and thundering. And we'd say, "Well, we're not going to have the AA meeting tonight." And Johnny and Waddell would come in drenched with a big book under their arm for the AA meeting. Oh, Lord. Then they had a video, a VCR videotape of My Name is Bill W. that somebody recorded off a Hallmark presentation. And they go, "Okay, everybody, it's time for the video." And we go in there and be like, a spark plug ran the other way. And I was just like, "Oh, kill me now." And then 10 minutes in, Bill's drinking and falling, and I'm like right there with him. Because, you know, that's me. And but they kept coming in there, and they kept bringing the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I continue to go down, 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 down. And you guys just wore me down, is what happened. Just wore me down. I remember sitting in that detox at Shell Avenue again, and I was telling the other, I almost said inmates, clients there. I was telling the other clients, I was like, and I remember vividly, I don't know, it's funny what you remember in life, isn't it? I was telling the kangaroo court that was listening to me, I said, "Let me tell you something. I'll die drunk in a ditch, drunk, before you see me at the Alano Club talking about my dog died or my girlfriend left, but I called my sponsor and worked those steps. Give me a break." And I meant it. I'll die drunk in a ditch before that ever happens. And every fiber of my being was just defiant. And I look back, I don't know why. I do know. I love the effect produced by alcohol. And it just had me mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. It just had me. But the AA people just kept chipping away at me and kept chipping away at me and kept chipping away at me. And this guy would come in and he'd tell his story. And he was a Vietnam vet. And he was our stories were a lot alike. A lot of military in my family. I did not. I went to a recruiter with Desert Storm or something. And he was like, "No, thanks, but no thanks." But this guy would come in and he had an atomic bomb story. And he lived homeless in the park with no teeth, drinking wine out of a paper bag. And I mean, he was came back from Vietnam with a heroin addiction on top of his alcoholism, but he was doing the deal. And I'd be sitting there at the detox and he would look at me and said, "Remember, God loves you." He was from Boston, Massachusetts. And I just always remembered that. And my mother used to say, "Another drunk weekend, huh?" Well, it was a drunk month. And because the gig was up one more time. I was on parole, and that was violated. I was on probation, and that was violated. I was on community control, and they were looking for me. And I went by my brother's house in Destin. He said, "Man, I don't know what you..." First of all, he said, I heard you pulling up out here." He walked out at like 6 o'clock in the morning to get his newspaper. And I'm pulling up in a little VW Bug. And he said, "I'm going to do you a favor and give you a little advice. When I heard that raggedy little bug coming through my neighborhood, I called the sheriff's department. Because I know you got warrants and I know they're looking for you." He said, "Because you're a alcoholic and a drug addict and a piece of shit. I don't want you around my children or my wife. And he turned around and walked back inside. And I thought, man, you know? And then he turned around and he said, I don't know what you done got into, but all kind of people have been by here looking for you. They're looking for you hard like I've never seen. And they were, again. So I, you know, what happens when that's going on? Go on a tear and check into detox, get under the radar. And that's where, you know, when they talk about powerless over alcohol and my life has become unmanageable. Well, right at that time, right a month before I got sober, 3 weeks before I got sober, I went to detox. I'll say this, Jim and Leo would do the meetings in the morning. Jim was a retired colonel and Leo was a retired chief master sergeant. It's a big Air Force town. And Leo Smith says, boy, what are you doing back here again? You just left. And I said, I don't know, Leo. He goes, what are you going to do different this time? And I just told him what he wanted to hear. I said, I'm going to go to long-term treatment. He said, is that what you think you need? And I said, that's what my family thinks I need. I just, you know, my family wouldn't speak to me. But he said, what do you think you need? I said, Leo, I guess I need to get a sponsor and work the steps. He said, let me ask you something. If God was in that chair right there beside you, do you think he could help you with your drinking? And I looked at the chair beside me, and I didn't want to banter words with this old chief. I said, well, yes, sir. He said, then why don't you let him? And I said, whoa, that's heavy. I know now why I never would, you know, say that prayer. I would say some prayers now. I'd be in court going, please help me get my memory reinstated, or please, you know, please God, I'll, you know. But never, please God, help me with my drinking. And I know now why I never asked that prayer. Because I was afraid it might work. And as bad as it had gotten, stitches in my head and a broken collarbone and limping in the detox again, I didn't want to quit drinking. I wanted you to talk to her or talk to him or somebody, but leave me alone. I'll be all right. But I wasn't all right. I was dying. And that man that came in, he talked about getting to a point of desperation where he finally asked for help. And, oh, well, yeah, I was going to tell you before I do that, is when I say powerless over alcohol and life's unmanageable, I know what that means. Because 2 weeks before I got sober, I married a girl I met in detox. It was the first time, you know, well, we had been in detox a couple of times together. And she said, I'm going to the mental institution when I leave here. And I said, I'm going back to prison. And she said, we should get out of here and get married, and maybe we won't go back and get locked back down. I said, that's a great idea. So that's how I roll when I'm drinking or not in my right mind. I think that's a little unmanageable, you know. And good God love her. I was married to her for 15 years, and she was a great girl. We had a good life. We were both completely clean and sober for 8.5 years, and some things happened. But she had problems other than alcohol, which it was difficult. I got married, you know, but the gig was up, and I was trying not to go back to jail. That's why I got married. But I knew I was anyway. And I had this parole thing. It was 3 years. I had to go back to Georgia, do 3 years, get out. I'd take the cops on three county, you know, like chase. So they were fit to be tied. They gave me a 2-year suspended sentence. I was 3 years in Georgia, come back, do 2 years. Then I had a 1129, they call it, for a pot. Got my marijuana maintenance days. Okay, I can tell the story quick. I'm driving down the street in my raggedy little bug, and there's Barbara. She's an old hippie girl. And I said, hey, Barbara, you going to the meeting? And she goes, yeah. I said, hop in. And we're driving down there. I said, Barbara, you want to smoke a joint? She goes, no way, man, my sponsor would kill me. I said, lighten up, Barbara. It's just a little weed. It's okay. She goes, just drop me off right here. I dropped her off in front of the clubhouse. And then I went around the block and smoked that joint. And I come back in to the Rise and Shine meeting. And I go, okay, this morning we're going to have a topic on, am I really sober if I'm doing other things? And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. I just blurted out. I said, I know y'all talking about me. I said, because I'm high right now, I'll tell you that. But if it ain't God's will that I smoke a little weed, he'll show me. Until then, y'all can kiss my ass. That night, I was in Niceville, and I went to this meeting. I was going to meetings everywhere, and it was a great meeting. I remember a girl from New York, from Brooklyn, she was talking, she was on fire. I said, man, that was a great meeting. And I'm smoking on the way home. Ah! I look back, it's a Niceville PD. Oh, boy. I pulled into it. He goes, oh, smell marijuana in the car, I have to get drugged off. It was bad. So one of the deputies walked up behind me, and it's Florida, so everybody's got shorts on. And I said, nope, I don't have any pot. Don't know why you'd be smelling it. And the other deputy yanked my pants down. I mean, just yanked them down to my knees. The bag of weed went poof right out of the ground. And my buddy was at the traffic light. And he was going, dude, you're busted. And I was like, yeah. But I had 6 years to do with all that combined, you know. And I was just scrambling, trying to do anything I could, go to this program, do whatever I could to, you know. And what happened is I just run it in the ground. I just run the ship aground. And one night, I mean, I can't take any credit for it. What I'll say is in the 12 and 12, a couple years ago, read finally, when all of our scorecards read zero. And, you know, I had read that before, but I thought it was when the scorecard read zero. You know, we play golf and put our score, we play hoops or whatever, you know, we put the score down. All of our scores. And what that meant to me was mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, you know, across the board. And that's where I had to get my scorecards read zero. Mentally, I was absolutely out of my mind. I mean, I was certifiable. And my mind raced a million miles an hour, and the only thing that would slow it down was Jack Daniels or Taka Vodka or whatever. Fill in the blank. And at the end, that even quit working. And they were always negative and bad. You know what I mean? I wouldn't sit around racing thoughts going, hey, let's go down to the church and volunteer. It was always like, you know what I mean? It was bad and dark. And physically, I was 34 years old, but I had drank myself to about the point where, see her purple shirt right there? My whole body looked that color. And I was just, you know, everybody knows the old alcoholic man with the big bright purple nose. My whole body looked like that. People say, damn, man, you've been out in the sun, haven't you? Yeah, deep sea fishing. You know, but I was like stroke level blood pressure. And my liver would swell up, and it couldn't handle all the chemicals I was putting in my body. And so, when I was a kid, we'd drink a whole bottle of something and drive around. And here I'm drinking two beers and because I'm getting septic. And there's no nice way, there are a lot of ladies here, nice way to say this. I'll say, this is when I started pooping on myself and throwing up, that nice things like that. But physically, I was done. Emotionally, I was what the book talks about, dangerously antisocial. Because here you come with your kids in a minivan, and I'm blind drunk coming in your lane, you know. It's a miracle I didn't kill myself or somebody else. And so, just across the board, I was done. And thank God I had heard at Ridgeview, and here, and all in the AA, the same message, because I went and I had it's horrible. I had a bottle of Jim Beam I got from Del Champ's Liquors, and I borrowed it, I needed a drink. And this girl, she fretted me some extra, you know, andas. And so I was going to drink that liquor and do that little bit of dope I had. And then tomorrow I'd figure out what I was going to do, right? So I went to this old girlfriend of mine's house and knocked on the door. And her mother had been very nice to me. She had kicked me to the curb, but her mother had been nice to me. But she opened up the door with one of those chains on it. She goes, "What do you want?" I'm kind of taken back. I was like, "Well, Marilyn, can I spend the night here? I'll stay out in the garage even." And she said, "Listen," I said, "I'm going to get some help tomorrow or whatever, turn myself, whatever it is." And she said, "I got the grandkids and they got to get on the bus in the morning. I don't want them to see you. You be gone by the time they get up." Slammed the door in my face. And I was like, "Cool." Because that's her boys would work on trucks. There's grease and stuff all in the sink. It was like a little shop with a half a bathroom. And the commode, it was nasty. It was perfect for what I wanted. So you want to drink that liquor. And I remember I was sitting there. I'd taken a couple pulls off of it, but not much. And I was poking holes in a beer can. You know, I heard a couple of laughs. But something came over me. I can't tell you what it was. It was not me. "I think I'll give my life to recovery now and join the..." No. It was... Something came over me. And I stood up. And I dropped what I had in the commode and poured a whole bottle of... It was Jim Beam. Poured a whole bottle of Jim Beam. A liter, too. On top of it. And flushed it. And as it's going down the drain, I got down on my knees and I said, "God, help me. I cannot go on like this." And next thing I remember, I fell over on this old army cot that I'd set up. And I came to, or woke up, reborn, whatever it was. And it was dark out. And I didn't know if it was dark morning or dark night, but I just made my way out and got in that little bug, and I drove it to 52 North Beale Parkway, the Alano Club. Because when you're down and out, and out of money, out of dope, out of liquor, warrants, you know, all that, there's nowhere that'll be glad to see you except an AA club. You know, the worse you look, the better you're received. You know, so, and so I showed up for duty at the Alano Club, and I had no idea my whole life was going to change that day. It was November 19th. It was November 18th, 1998, that I said that prayer. November 19th, 1998, that I went to my first meeting, and I had nowhere to go. I didn't want to venture too far off and get it, you know, pinched. So I just stayed there at the club. And I drank that old coffee and I ate those stale donuts and went to meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting. And, you know, you stay at the clubhouse long enough, they'll say, "You need to get a sponsor. You need to start doing, you need to get a..." Yeah. And I knew that guy at Detox was the one for me. Because I knew he and his wife were like... They were heavyweights. They were doing the deal. And so I went down to the St. Mary's Church cafeteria and to the Miracle Group. And he was walking out the door, and I had a reputation of being in and out a lot, right? I mean, everybody thought I'd die drunk. I mean, I just could not seem to get sober. I called myself the Crown Prince of Relapse. But he's walking out and he sees me, and the look on his face was like, "Oh God." Cause he could tell that I was walking toward him. And I said, "Hey man, can I talk to you for a minute?" And he goes, "Yeah, what's up?" Real inviting. I said, "I need some help. I wanted to know if you would sponsor me. I'm dying." He said, "Yeah, I know you are." He said, "Let me ask you something." He qualified me for Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, "Are you alcoholic?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "I do dope and all that other stuff, but I'm alcoholic from inside and out." I've had more DUIs than I care to admit to, and problems with alcohol ever since I was a kid. So he qualified me, and he said, listen, I can't get you drunk, I can't get you sober. This is between you and God. It's an inside job. He said, but I'll guarantee you one thing. If you do anything that I ask of you, without debate, you and I can stay sober one day at a time together. I said, just tell me what to do, man. And he said, he told me what to do. He said, I want you to get up in the morning and I want you to get down on your knees. And I want you to ask God to keep you away from a drink just for that day. He said, you beg God to keep you sober. And he said, if you don't believe in God, I don't really care. You just do it. And I started going, well, I don't really have a problem with, and he just, with God, and he interrupted me because he didn't care whether I, he said, did you drink every day? I said, well, yeah. He said, I want you in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous every day. If you can get to the bar, or you can get to the liquor store, or the dope man's house, you can get to a meeting. I lived at the clubhouse, so that wasn't a stretch. But, on the sofa. But, he said, the third thing is don't drink. If you think about drinking, you get down on your knees and you beg God to take that obsession away. You go on a job site, go on a, in a port-a-john or a closet or whatever you have to do. And then you talk about it. Call me or call somebody and talk about it. And it saved my life right there. And because you hear a lot of things in AA. Oh, get to a meeting. You know, well, what if you can't? Oh, you know, call your spouse. Well, what if you can't? You know what I mean? The old ask God for help. You know, that's what I was taught. He said, the fourth thing is, I've heard you share in meetings and I can tell you've never been accountable to anybody. I want you to call me every day between 5 and 6 o'clock. And I was like, oh, okay. But the hair on the back of my neck kind of stood up because, you know, I didn't really like to be told what to do. But he said, and if you've stayed sober just for the day, you thank God for keeping you sober before you go to bed at night. And I said, okay, well, I need to, like, get involved with, like, the steps and, like, need a service. He said, whoa. You just call me tomorrow between 5 and 6 o'clock. How about that? Here's my number. And, okay. And I walked out on the porch and he said, let me ask you something. Do you have a driver's license? And I said, no. He said, didn't you pull up in that raggedy little bug before the meeting? And I said, yeah, but I only drive to meetings. And he said, no. If you want me to sponsor you, you don't drive. You don't break the law. I was like, what is that? And so the next morning I had somebody else drive the bug back to the clubhouse. I was going to go to this little meeting at Cinco Baptist Church. I'm warming the bug up. Brum, brum, brum. And I heard, don't drive. And I was like, oh, dear God. And I walked to the meeting on Yacht Club Drive, and I'm walking down Beale Parkway thinking, what a bunch of nonsense. Don't do this, do that, guess God for it. But I was putting one foot in front of the other. For the first time, somebody told me what to do, I did it. Not what to do, I didn't do it. You know, and I look back now, that's when my life began to change. And everything in my life that alcohol, and I got to tell you real quick, my 6 years in jail, I did my 4-step with my sponsor, and he goes, now you're going to have to do your inventory, and you got to turn yourself in at the jail. You'll have plenty of time to do it there. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I did. I did. I had plenty of time to do my inventory, very thorough at the county jail. But 6 years turned into 4 or 5. I said 4 months. My friend said more like 5.5 or 6. But it turned into a lot less time because, I'll tell you why, because I stayed sober and I was, had a commitment to my, I was doing the deal, period. That's why 6 years turned into 4 months. My parole officer, my probation officer came to see me at the jail. And later we're at Crab Island in Destin on a boat. And he's Steve at that point. He used to be Mr. Seville. He said, Do you ever wonder why I helped you? I said, huh? He said, you remember I come up there to the jail and saw you? And I was like, I think so. He said, I asked you, I looked right at you, and he said, I asked you, if I were to help you, what would be different this time? And you looked right at me and you said, nothing. I can almost guarantee you I will relapse and disappoint you and violate my probation and parole, because that's what I do. I violate. But today, today, right now, I'm going to go back to that jail pod, and they're smoking weed down there and drinking and doing all kind of nonsense, and I'm not going to drink today. He said, it's the first time you ever told me the truth. So he wrote a letter to the Georgia Parole Board, and that's what saved my, it's in my big book at home. I laminated it. But that's Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, working in my life, and I got out of that jail, hit the ground running, just like a rutting buck, just through the woods. And I was going to meetings, and I was just a mess. And this man saved my life. And I got to tell you, I'll wrap this up. What I did early on in recovery is what I do. And right now I'm in a season in my recovery. I'm not doing as much as I used. It's just the first time I've never done as much. So, you know, some change back to my original home group, blah, 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 blah. But early on, I believe, we were talking to Wes about this, about the 36 principles of recovery. And I remember I was about a year sober, and this lady had talked about that at a convention. I said, what is she talking about? 36? What? He said, the steps, the traditions, and the concepts. He hadn't got that far with me yet. But that's, you know, I was talking to Wes about this. Say I have a three-legged stool and I'm balancing on two of them. I might can do that for a while and get away with it. But if I'm on all three legs, I'm solid foundation. And so that means I've got to be working the steps in my life. How do I work the steps in my life? I go through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous with sponsees. And where there's a step, we work the step. Where there's a prayer, we do the prayer. Where there's a action, we take the action. And so I'm constantly working steps. I have a home group, and I show up to my home group, and I have a service commitment. I am the PICPC rep for our zone. I do a commitment at a detox. You know, things like that. That's about, I'm not bragging, but I'm saying, you know, if you took one of those away, would I stay sober? I don't know. Maybe. But I don't want to find out. You know, I volunteer over here with John S. at the Transition Center. That's my peeps over there, you know. I mean, that's, you know, Ponce de Leon on Saturday night, you know. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to go here in a minute. I want to tell you real quick what the amends process did for me. Is I went to my mother and father, and I said, I'm sorry, whatever we do, you know. And I said, whatever, yeah, you were. But I tell you what happened is my daddy got sick, and our family, I don't know, it probably would have been better to send them to a nursing home, but you don't do that. You take care of your family. And my sponsor moved across the country, and I had a new sponsor. I had bought a home, by the way. My sponsor said, your wife told me you were looking at porno last night. And she busted me out. I said, well, really, it was like Cinemax or something. It wasn't like porno. And he goes, how do you get all those channels? I said, man, I used to put cable TV in apartment buildings in Atlanta. I just crawl up on the telephone pole and change it and hook it up. He said, you ask God to keep you sober and you steal your cable? I said, yeah, man, I can come over and do yours if you like. And he said, you don't get it. I want you to pay your cable bill. And I was like, really? And so I had to go up on the pole and unhook it so they could come over and hook it back up. But 5 years later, this mortgage lender said, If you can show where you've been paying a bill, I don't care if it's a cell phone, water bill, whatever, for 5 years, you can buy this house. And I called everywhere, Destin Water, everywhere. And I was like, I know I wouldn't be the cable company, so I called Cox Cable. You've been a faithful member for 5 years and 2 months. I was like, get the hell out of here. Because he made me pay my cable bill, I was able to buy a house. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? It ain't me. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. But my sponsor moved across the country, and I got Victor. And Victor would go, sit down. Just sit down. And I'd be like, oh, shit. But he was always right. I said, I'm going to go help my daddy. He's sick. He said, sit down. He had been through it with his mother and father. And I was like, oh, God. He said, listen, you're good with commitments. You've been doing that detox meeting over there ever since you got sober. Every week. You're good at your home group. He said, if you're going to take care of your father, you take it on as a commitment. You don't just go over there 3 or 4 days in a row and then don't go back for 4 months. He said, you make an itinerary of what you're going to do when you go there. You're going to go on Tuesday and you're going to only go on Friday, or you're going to only go one day a week, or don't go too much, don't go too little. I can't remember my schedule. I think it was like 3 days a week. And I would go over and make the bed and feed my mother and father. And my daddy, my brother fed him some kind of Italian food, and he pooped everywhere. And I cleaned him up and gave him a bath. Gets out of the shit, just again, the same thing. I got to give him a second bath. And this is my hero, you know, he's a war hero. And I finally get him, and he's got this robe on, and I'm putting socks on his feet. And he looked like the Mad Hatter, his hair's all shoot up. And I look up at him, and he said, I'm sorry. I'm such a pain in the ass. And I said, whoa. If I took care of you like this for the next 100 years, it wouldn't balance the books. And I went down and got down inside my Jeep and got down on my knees on the way home and thanked God for helping me, for Victor, telling me how to do that. Because I was there until he took his last breath. That's amends. Sorry. I can usually catch it. Sorry. The same with my mother. I was there till she took her very last breath. And the last part of her life, she'd get these urinary tract infections. And she lived in a nice little neighborhood, Summer Grove. She would come here. Yes, ma'am. Would you go feed the horses out back? They need some sweet feed and some corn. She was just looped. When she started talking about the horses in the backyard, it was time to take her for some treatment at the hospital. But I was able to be there for my mother and father. And that's amends. I see Wes doing that for his mother and building the relationship with his father. That's just, I mean, that's what this is all about. It's about not being that mess anymore, but being something that God wants me to be. And I did everything wrong. You know, everything wrong. But my motives were right. I believe because of that and the steps and sponsorship, when my mom and dad were dying, Brad and all these sponsees I had, Steve, just carried me over a bridge to the other side. And I look back and it was sponsorship. And they helped me more than I ever helped them. And it's just a beautiful thing to be a part of, and I'm so glad that I'm here, and so glad that y'all are here, and it beats the hell out of flying through windshields sitting over at the work camp, that's for sure. Thanks.
If you want any updates on what has or has not changed at Ridgeview since you've been there, I can provide those.
Cool.
All right, let's give him another round of applause. Okay. I have asked Mia to do the chips.
Oh, Mia.
All right.
Hi, I'm Neil. I'm an alcoholic.
All right,
so we got the white chip, the surrender chip, going once, going twice. We got the silver chip for 30 days. Going once, going twice. We got the gold chip for 60 days. Going once, going twice. No?
Okay.
We got the red chip, 90 days. We're about to pop. Going once, going twice. No? Okay. Yellow, 6 months. No? Okay. Green, 9 months. That was the wrong chip. Y'all about to pop now.
Going twice.
Blue, 1 year or multiple.
I'm working with an alcoholic in the first year. Told myself I was going to keep it together and not cry, so we'll see how that goes. But first and foremost, I just want to thank God. Because I grew up with religion and then got into my teenage years and early 20s, and the drinking and drugs and alcohol and the substances of the world took hold, and I forgot where I came from. If not for God, I would never have found that, His mercy and His grace just taking me back in and turning me from somebody who, like, didn't think that I was going to get this ever and couldn't look people in the eye and just didn't have a single ounce of self-worth in me, thinking that I had to do all of the things that I did when I was drinking to be worth something to somebody. If it wasn't for God and my family, I wouldn't have made it into these rooms. To meet all of you guys that saw me and really loved me until I couldn't love myself, all that. And if it wasn't for God and my sponsor and these 12 steps and the alcoholics here with me now and who came before me, I wouldn't be here today accepting this in front of you guys. So thank you so much.
We got the white chip again. Everyone deserves a second chance. Going once, going twice. Good job, everyone.
Well, my head was in tomorrow, and my feet followed history. I had an insane notion I could hoodoo everything around me. No. 'Cause too much of everything.